Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyond Ananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Uprising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hi there. All right. Listening to the sounds of Drive Your Comic, Curb Your Dogma, our official theme song. Welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the undarkened corridors of power, and we shine a light ahead of us to the path where evolution is leading. Purpose of Wiki Politiki is to bring left and right front and center to face the music and dance together. In other words, to address problems instead of defending positions. And this show, we have a very interesting topic, leadership. Now, most of us, when we think of leadership, unless we identify ourselves as a leader, generally we're thinking about somebody else out there. And now, at a time when there's so much dissatisfaction with our leaders, we might consider that leadership has to evolve to activating many different kinds of talents and varieties of people. Our guests on Wiki Politiki this week, Karen and Henry Kimsey House, have spent the past 3 decades coaching and teaching leadership that, quote, harnesses the possibility of many rather than relying on the power of one. They write, here's a quote, top-down, one-dimensional leadership models are hopelessly outmoded in today's rapidly changing world, and they waste the leadership ability that is present throughout an organization. This revolutionary five-dimensional approach recognizes that leadership has to be fluid and flexible, and that the roles leaders and followers play must shift to suit the situation. Co-active leadership involves all of us to share our expertise and allows collaborative solutions to emerge that would never have been possible otherwise. About our guests, one of the first professional coaches in the 1980s and co-founder and lead designer of Co-active Training Institute's experiential learning programs, Henry Kimsey House is also the co-author of Co-active Leadership and Co-active Coaching. He has been an actor since the age of 9, and he's honed his insights into human emotion and the narrative process through classical theatrical training and years of stage, television, and film experience. With deep conviction that education should be driven by immersive, contextually based learning instead of dry information, Henry's committed to creating richly engaging and transformative learning where retention approaches 80% rather than the traditional 20%. We're going to talk more about that kind of learning. And Karen Kimsey House, co-founded the Co-active Training Institute in 1992 with Laura Whitworth and Henry. Together, they co-created the Co-active philosophy of relationship that informs CTI's world-renowned coaching and leadership programs. She is also the co-author of Co-active Coaching and Co-active Leadership. She's a successful entrepreneur, and she founded and directed the Learning Annex San Francisco Adult Education Program in 1986 and grew it into one of the most admired programs under the National Learning Annex brand. I've taught courses for them, so we have something in common. Welcome, Karen, and welcome, Henry. Good to have you on.
Delighted to be here.
Great to be here.
Okay, good. Now we're going to start with a very basic question. That was interesting, whatever. We have some little mice on the line here. I know it's a very basic question, but How do you actually define leadership?
That's an interesting question. You know, it's a basic question, but it's an important one because we all think we know what leadership means, but we have a slightly different interpretation of it. For us, we believe that leadership is a way of being in relationship with your world rather than a role or a title or an event. It's relational rather than transactional.
And we said what our classic definition is a leader is one who is responsible for his world or her world. That's basically it's about responsibility, and it's about the size of the world that you are holding responsibility for, taking responsibility for.
Very good. So leadership is relational. You can't have leaders. I when I first started my Swami Beyondananda column, I did a spoof of the famous artist school. We're looking for people who want to draw. And we had the famous guru school. We're looking for people who want to draw on higher consciousness. And we had a fake testimonial letter that said, "Dear Swami, I loved your leadership program. Please send followers." So, obviously. it takes more than one. And I guess we're all responsible for ourselves. So we are the leader of our own. We are the CEO of our own, you know, one unit enterprise. But I like that. So amplify that just a little bit, because, again, What are kind of levels of – how do you relate this responsibility inside of an organization, and how do you let people know that they're leaders if they're responsible for something? They may not think of themselves as leaders.
So I want to expand a couple of things in answering that question. First of all, I want to expand the understanding of organization, because when we think of organization, we think of corporation. And when we say organization, we mean any – collection of, you know, three or more people. A family is a small organization, right? So double click on that to expand the interpretation of organization. In terms of responsibility, from our perspective, it has two parts. The ability to respond, to be present and awake and what we call on deck and on the radio, and able to respond creatively rather than reactively to the circumstances of our life. And then to understand that we are the authors of our own life story. The circumstances we all share, they come and go. But what we create from that is actually completely up to us. Henry, you want to talk a little bit more about responsibility?
Yeah, so one of the things that we know is true as we're starting to do the work we've done with in collective coaching and collective leadership is that one of the things that is about expanding consciousness is the ability to embrace paradox and embrace two apparently opposite things being true at the same time. So Karen's talking about one of the ultimate paradoxes of responsibility, which is both I'm creating my world and I'm responding to the world that's coming back at me. So it's like a cycle, or it's two different things at once. And to really hold responsibility, we have to be able to hold that paradox of responsibility. And oftentimes it goes one way or the other. It's either my way or the highway, or it's your way or the highway. You know, it's like the way often we hold it, you know.
And so
we declare is that everyone is a leader, not just one person. So it's not a leader follower system. It's a system where everyone's a leader and they take responsibility for the world in different ways, or as we say, from different dimensions of leadership.
Very interesting. So I go ahead. Go ahead, Karen. You got something to say.
Karen,
are you there?
I don't.
She might have gotten knocked off. So why don't you ask your question?
We don't want to knock anybody off here. I mean, okay. Well then, it's you and me, buddy. You know, we lost the girl.
She'll be back. I know her.
Okay, I know she'll be back. We know that, but we won't tell her what she missed.
Okay.
So this is really interesting that, you know, she talked about responding creatively and not reactively. And, you know, we are so trained in a way to either be in our own egos where what we have to say is most important, or to be passive and make what other people say important and kind of diminish our contribution.
Yeah.
You have identified different kinds of leadership. How do you communicate? First of all, how do you communicate the level of responsibility in being in a group and playing both roles, being being both the initiator of activity and the responder? How do you cultivate that dance?
Karen, are you back?
I'm back. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Reasons which escape understanding, I got dropped off.
So let me ask this question. You can return to where we are.
Good.
One of the things that we have done in all of our work is we do something called, we have consciously designed alliances. We sort of define relationship as a consciously designed alliance. And so what we want in any relationship, whether it's with a leader, you know, in what we call a leader in front, who would be the person who's everyone grants sort of the power of decision making to, and then the leaders behind or leaders beside that we have in other dimensions, there has to be an agreement, a designed alliance about operating that way, you know, and how, what each of us will bring to that party, whatever the topic is, the subject that's being led, you know, we all would bring something to it, and we need to be conscious about designing our alliance, our relationship to how that would work, you know.
So if you think of a corporation, an organization, there are definitely different roles and responsibilities, right? The CFO is responsible for the financial well-being of the organization. The CEO points the vision and direction of the organization, and so on and so forth. So those are roles, and they're important, and they're useful so that everybody knows what they need to be doing and paying attention to. But beyond that, and perhaps surrounding that, is a system of people who are in relationship with each other, who are working together towards a common outcome and a common goal. And I think what gets so often lost in the leadership conversation is that relational part, that we're actually all leaders together, that one is not more important than the other. We have different functions that we perform, or as Henry says, different dimensions that we occupy. We're all working together collaboratively, and we all have something very important to contribute to the direction that we're heading and the outcome that we want to achieve.
Mm-hmm. So this is really, I mean, it's really ultimately teamwork in the sense that there's a goal or intention that the entire team wants to achieve, and there's different people who are on the team because of the different talents or skills or experience or expertise that they bring. And, you know, in a certain regard, each one, you know, has a unique contribution that they can make. You've identified different kinds of leadership. You've actually categorized these forms of leadership. What are those forms?
Well, we've for purpose of the conversation, and these aren't meant to be exclusive or definitive, we've divided leadership into five different orientations or come-froms. And dimensions, we call them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, and each dimension holds a different way of being in relationship with one's world. And they have a different function. Leader in front, their job is to really connect the vision or direction with the people that are leaders behind. So they bring the direction and the people together through conversation. Leaders behind are supporting and doing
everything. Can I say something, Karen?
Sure.
Can I say something about
Absolutely.
That first before you move on? About leader in front is that they're also in a relationship that is one of both making that connection, but also knowing when they're done, you know, as leader in front. They know how to sit down and they know how to hand off to someone else to take it to the next place. As opposed to being assigned or hired or elected to that position, they occupy it out of their knowing and everyone else is knowing that this is the right person to be there. Right?
Mm-hmm. So for a particular endeavor, a leader in front might not be the president of the company. It might be somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Somebody who may know more about that project, who may have more fire, passion, expertise in that project, and so they get to lead from the front because they have a greater sense of where it's going.
Yes, right. Exactly. Yeah, in the book I write about a short story about an organization where there was a senior person who was trying to put together a marketing plan, and two of the younger people in the organization came forward with a social media plan for marketing. This senior executive knew nothing about social media, so he said to the two young people, you go for it. I've got your back. You know, let me know what you need. He sat down in that moment and turned the leadership of that initiative over to people who were young and gunny and had energy and also knew quite a bit more about the topic and the product than he did.
Right.
And he moved the leader behind so he could support them.
Yeah, that's excellent. Yeah, knowing when to sit down and let somebody else take over, and that's obviously leadership.
Yes, exactly. And it's dynamic.
That's the dimension. That's the dimension of. Whoops, sorry, talking at the same time again. That's the leader. That's the dimension of leader in front. It's the dimension of leader in front, and Karen was about to move into the dimension of leader behind, which is the position of leadership, which is about absolutely supporting what's occurring, both the person that's leading in front, but also supporting powerfully what's occurring and serving not just the person, not being the victim, not being the one that's being told what to do, but actually taking responsibility for that direction through service and through through holding the vision of the person. So they're holding this leader in front's vision. Even when that leader in front gets pulled off vision, they're there to bring him back on. They're serving both the person and the vision.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Go ahead. That I like that idea of, in a way, that silent power, but actually making things happen through influence and through your own follow-up and handling details and etc.
Well, yeah, if the leader in front is saying where we go on an endeavor, leaders behind are looking for what is needed as we go, right? Which could be a variety of different things. It's just two different places of looking. Both are really important. I mean,
exactly.
Make no mistake about it. The success of any endeavor rests on the dedication and the devotion of leaders behind.
Exactly.
Otherwise, you got a leader in front who's going out for a walk, you know.
He finds he's by himself, or she. We're going to take a little break, and we're going to be back shortly with Karen and Henry Kimsey House. We're going to be talking about the new kinds of leadership and cultivating leadership throughout an organization. This is Steve Behrman. We're on Wiki Politiki Radio.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Are you done with the daily barrage of negativity? Ready for some positivity? Creations Magazine has been inspiring the soul for over 30 years, delivering thought-provoking and solution-driven articles, essays, and poetry that inspire you to enjoy a vibrant life. Holistic health, personal and spiritual growth, relationships, the environment, and so much more. Read us online or order a subscription, creationsmagazine.com.
911, what is your emergency?
My kid shot himself.
All right, where's the wounds?
911, what's your emergency?
Police
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns.
It wasn't locked.
Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Okay, Steve Behrman, I'm back with our guests, Karen and Henry Kimsey House, and they're talking about collective coaching and collective leadership. And we're talking about the different dimensions of leadership. We've talked about leading from the front. We've talked about leading from behind. What else is on the menu?
So two other dimensions to mention, and they all rest, of course, on a foundation of leader within, which is really about being self-reflective. It's being true to yourself and living a life according to your purpose and your values, being true. So if you think of leader within as the foundation under which all the leader, the other dimensions we're talking about rest, it's the place of choice, it's the place of awareness, and it's the place of embracing the whole of oneself, the shadow and the light and all of the paradoxical parts of ourselves that live within us.
Well, that sounds like challenging. It's very worthy and challenging. Self-reflective spiritual endeavor. Let's imagine that you're called in to work at an organization. We'll say it's a business, but it could be a nonprofit, and you find people there who are in roles that are really not who they are. They're kind of squeezing themselves into that role, but you can recognize as an external visitor to the situation that that person doesn't really love what they're doing. They're kind of distracted because they'd rather be doing something else. How do you deal with that kind of a awkward dance?
Well, first, I think you have to meet people where they are. So you meet the situation and the circumstances. And then once you, so without opinion or agenda. So for instance, if I were to go into a place like that and I had a lot of opinions about how people ought to be doing things differently and how they were really kind of dumb and wrong for working the way that they were working, it wouldn't be all that helpful, right? I need to let go and, you know, as best as I can of my own personal bias and meet the situation. And then I think the next part is to really consider how can I be of use? How can I serve here? What can I bring forward from myself that will be useful rather than, again, having a big agenda to fix or change things? You know, what is needed here from me, I think, is a really, really, really powerful question.
What was that place I would look?
Yeah.
Say that again, Karen. I missed that. What question could they ask
now? What is needed now for me? What is needed now in this moment, in this place, in this time? Not for my ideology, not for my opinions and my point of view or my positions, but by being present in the moment and really meeting my environment where it is and looking to see how I might serve.
That's wonderfully, wonderfully helpful and practical. In improvisational comedy, the mantra is serve the scene, serve the scene, serve the scene. So serve the scene. You're not looking at individual, you know, here I am. You're basically looking at moving things along as part of an ongoing something that is happening. So I can see that people would be a lot more, they'd be a lot happier and satisfied if they go, you know what, I'm being myself and I'm doing what I can.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a wonderful way to live. Serve the scene.
Yeah. Henry.
I tell you that I love that you brought up improvisation training and improv work, because there's no training on the planet, and I would recommend this to all of your listeners, that is better for training people in relationship and collaboration than improv theater training. It just is one of the best contextual, experientially driven drivers to what it is we're creating in this kind of leadership. In other words, to serve the scene, to come from a place of yes and, and all the other things that improv is bringing to the world, it just is awesome training for all the kind of dimensions we're talking about.
Yeah, and as a professional comedian, I have to confess that I got kicked out of an improv class for punning, and also for getting to the joke too quickly. And I said, "Oh, you mean premature?" I said, "You mean premature ejaculation?" And you know, that's when they kicked me out.
I don't think improv class is for you.
Not for me, but Henry, now that's kind of leading into my next questions, which have to do with, you know, your background and Karen's background and how that led to you to what you were doing. So I'm fascinated that you've been involved with the theater since you were a kid. Say something about that.
Well, one of the things that theater training and being in the theater did for me, because as an actor particularly, is understanding the human experience from inside it, instead of analyzing, assessing it, or studying it from outside it. I think that's what actors, really good actors, are doing, is they get inside the human experience. And so a lot of the work that we have developed has come from this idea of what we call contextually based, experientially driven, transformative learning. And the way we can shorten that down from the point of view of actors is that the way an actor gets into a role has to be understanding why they're there as a character, the context, what's surrounding them, what they're trying to create. And then they have to have practice, rehearse, experience, and get into this character's experience and make mistakes and fail and succeed get into the experience of what it is to be this character they're playing. And then out of that comes a transformation, comes a shift or a change, both in the performance as an actor, but also in human realization and consciousness in terms of education. We put those things grow together, you know, in a really powerful way.
You know, that's interesting because you use the word why, and, you know, there's a lot of being written now about, you know, you really want to get to the why of something rather than the how. That it's not how do I get people to vote for me, but why are they going to vote for me? How do I get people to buy my product, but why are they going to buy the product? So in getting into a character from the inside out, I can see where you can get to that why, and then how you portray the character is a dimension of their motivation. You know, that's going to determine how you play the character.
With that kind of acting, you're not going to notice acting in quotes. You're going to notice this person being this character. Right, that's what you're going to
see. And that's a great place to get to. So say something about, did you grow up in Hollywood? Did you grow up in New York?
No, I grew up in Wisconsin, and in the 60s and 70s. And my dad was in college. He was an acting major because he was also a stutterer. And so whenever he acted, he didn't stutter. And so he majored in college. When I was a kid, he became a college professor, a speech pathologist, interestingly enough. And when I was 9, he took me to an audition for Oliver because he thought I might love the theater. And from that point on, I was hooked. It was for a college production of Oliver, and they were auditioning the kids. And I went and auditioned and got a role. I played Charlie Bates, who was Artful Dodger's right-hand man. And that's what I played at 9. And from then on, it was just that I was in the theater constantly. That's what I did. I was in all the way through school and high school and that kind of thing. And then I went on into college theater and then went to New York. And then I pursued professional acting in New York until I was about 30, 32, 33. And then that's when I started getting impatient with the business of it. So, of course, when you get impatient with the business of it, you become a career consultant for actors, which is what I did. And that career consulting then began to look like coaching, because consulting the career of an actor actors are 90, the unemployment rate for acting is about 99%. in any given day in New York, there's probably 250,000, 300,000 actors in New York, and there's probably 2,000 jobs, or 2,500 jobs. And so you had to coach the whole person. You had to be looking at their whole lives. Were they satisfied? Did they have a sense of purpose? What were their values? All those kind of things we were starting to do. And that career consulting of artists became coaching from my angle. It was very similar to what became called coaching, and it's what we call coaching now.
You know, it's interesting.
Coaching the whole person's life.
I've noticed over the past couple of decades that more people have come to the coaching area from being therapists. You know, that they, instead of trying to fix somebody who's not well, they would much rather help somebody work on a goal that they wanted to attain. But you are coming from it basically as looking at your own experience in theater and, you know, helping other people develop their theater talent into other careers. Karen, how did you get involved in this kind of work?
Well, I, as my bio said, was running the Learning X in San Francisco, and I met Laura Whitworth in some class that the Learning X was offering called Design Your Life. And we hit it off together. I had been wanting to strike out on my own and work with people in a particular way. I considered going back to school and getting my master's in, family therapy. But this life planning approach that we got exposed to in this little workshop began to make more sense to me. A way to support people rather than being, diagnosing as a pathology, to support them in looking forward at what they wanted to create in their life. And I really responded to the positive context. And at some point, Henry came out from New York. He left New York and came out and joined us. And over time, we began to call what we were doing coaching. And that conversation was starting to bubble up. The idea of individual coaching was starting to bubble up in a number of different places around the United States. And it was my cup of tea. It was what I had wanted to do most of my life, but didn't have any, if you will, context for it. I didn't have any frame to put around it.
And so this leadership model, is that something that it sounds like, since you were calling it, coactive, that was something that was developed right at the start. Is that true?
Actually, no. The leadership model that we were talking about here is relatively new. We opened the business in 1992. By 1995, we were offering programs in a variety of different locations and really killing ourselves to try to fly to all these places, the three of us, and deliver these programs, because we insisted on having two leaders at the front of every room. We didn't want our participants to think that there was just one right way to do something. We wanted two different kinds of people leading every course. So we realized we had to have a program to train people to lead our program. So we designed a 10-month leadership program called, very artfully, the Coactive Leadership Program that we started delivering in 19. Oddly enough, we're so creative at doing things. And the model that we are talking about today grew out of our work in that leadership program. Every model we ever created came from work that we were already doing, trying to make a map for that rather than making a map and then fitting the work inside of it.
Mm-hmm.
So the model is relatively new. I think we came up with it in about, just a second. The model is relatively new. I think we started working on it about 2012, I think, Henry started working on the model, the Coactive Leadership Model.
Mm-hmm. Henry?
The genesis of the model, too, came from, if you recall, in 2011, there were two movements that were happening at the same time, the Arab Spring and Occupy Wall Street. And there was very powerful, what I witnessed, very powerful circular leadership happening. In other words, like, it wasn't easy to identify a leader, an appointed leader. So obviously, and yet some leadership was happening. And yet it didn't sustain. You know, it didn't sustain. And so I wanted to see what was the kind of leadership that was happening in those circles, in both those environments. And I wanted to come at it from a sort of a crowdsourcing conversation. So I took a road trip all the way around the country and stopped at about 30 or 40 of the places where we do our workshops and had meetings with conversations, I called them, with people in those communities. And we really started having this conversation, looking at how does leadership work in a circle? You know, how does leadership work? What's needed? And out of that emerged the dimensional model that we formed.
Very interesting, because, again, those of us who had some familiarity with the Occupy movement, and, you know, back in the day, I was involved with various co-ops and so on, and the most exasperating thing was the node leadership model, that and the insistence on equality, the entire quality of leadership was discarded. So I'm very curious to hear how you took this circular leadership and began to use that. We have about a minute, so let's get started, because I think this is the most fascinating piece for our listeners. How does this circular, how would you have, if you were doing the Occupy movement, let's say, and you were going to train people to be leaders in this Occupy movement, what would you have done that they didn't do?
Wow, that's a big question. And where I would start is with going back to both the Designed Alliance piece that I mentioned earlier in the conversation, and also looking at what dimensions people have and where are they in a place of trusting and loving themselves and each other, which is what the Leader Within is about.
Right. And sometimes you have people who are pretty disturbed in those situations, and they're not capable of that particular quality, which is fundamental. So, we'll get back to this. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back on WikiPolitiki with Karen and Henry, Kim Z. House, and talking about co-active leadership.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
The Shift Network. Presenting transformative programs and events to help you awaken to your full potential so that together we can build the more beautiful world our hearts know is possible. Our classes support you in finding and cultivating your gifts and in bringing those gifts to the world to create tangible change and connect us as global citizens. Go to theshiftnetwork.com or follow the link on the WikiPolitiki sponsors page.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Well, we're back We're talking about coactive leadership with Karen and Henry Kimsey House. And, you know, this is a really interesting idea because a lot of people are self-organizing these days. Some people are organizing co-ops of various kinds to, you know, deliver food to people. Sometimes people are organizing political activist groups and so on. What kinds of tools can coactive leadership offer people who are just regular people who want to be effective working in teams?
You know, I love what Henry said earlier about the Occupy and the Wall Street movement, and also what you said about how really cool it was, but also how frustrating it was to get any forward momentum because everything needed to be included. And I think that it's important to really look at a balance of freedom or inclusion and structure, which anything really needs to thrive. So let's say you're self-organizing, whatever it is that you're self-organizing, you need to really hold a balance. What's the structure that will support forward movement? And what's the designed alliance that Henry was talking about earlier that will help us stay in relationship while we get there? So oftentimes a structure for forward movement, you know, abandons relationship and leaves it behind. So everybody says, oh, well, you know, no more of that structure. We're going to be in relationship now with each other and really, really be connected. And all voices will be heard and everything will be included. And people will always be respected. But now there's not a structure for forward movement. So you need both and rather than either or.
You know, that's so interesting because people, it's sort of that aspect of human nature, unless you're like me and I'm a Libra and I'm Enneagram 9, aspect of human nature is to polarize to this is the way and not that.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that a lot of these organizations like Occupy have this built-in bias against authority and so on. How do we reframe, quote-unquote, authority in a co-active leadership context?
Henry, you want to take that?
Yeah, I am. There's a wonderful orchestra that I'm working with right now that has handled this. They're called the Orpheus Orchestra, based in New York City, but they have different followings other places. And they're a conductorless orchestra, and they've been around since the 70s, and they're one of a world-renowned orchestra. And I've been working with them because they are trying to capture how they do what they do, which is what I'm talking about with circular leadership. And the key words that come up, first of all, are some values. They have managed to create amazing respect for each other. You know, there's great respect and great trust in each other. And there's a whole process of becoming a member of this, getting a seat in this orchestra. And it takes sometimes many years to do that. And sort of this leadership dimension we haven't talked about, which is leader in the field, which is feeling the energetic field, feeling the energies that are in the environment, and how you dance with and feel those energies. And the orchestra as a whole feels it's right, then the person gets a seat. And then each song and each concert has different leaders that stand up and say, I want to lead this. And so there's these like bubbling hierarchies that occur and then disappear. And everyone is always leading. And when you're not a hierarchy, when you haven't said, I'm going to be the one holding the time and leading this concert piece, the other ones get into it. They have all their different disagreements about as they're practicing it about it. And then they become leaders behind to this this person who is sort of stepping up and leading this piece. And then that person sits down and another person stands up and leads the next piece. Right. And so it's like it's a fascinating exchange of leadership that's happening. So when you ask about tools, one of the tools is trust in you have to create trust and you have to create a listening. It's amazing how we think we listen, you know, and how we don't, you know, and how do we truly listen to people? And the third thing is a kind of flexibility, kind of ability to sort of dance with whatever's showing up in this moment, you know, and dance with it and know that, okay, I can stand up and lead here, or I can hand off to this person, or I can totally support what's happening, or I can collaborate with this person over here, you know, and that kind of flexibility, trust, and listening is necessary for this kind of leadership to work. And so a lot of our initial work with individuals and organizations, as you were saying, is how do we create that kind of listening and that kind of sense of trust and connection and growing our own consciousness, basically.
Well, and that ability to be flexible.
Yeah.
That ability to be flexible and off the spot.
You know, one of the most difficult performances and presentations I ever gave, and I didn't find out why until later, it was for a youth service project in Colorado, and I did a program on humor. And there was something about it that didn't work, and what didn't work was that there were people from all strata in the audience, and the bosses and the underlings did not want to be vulnerable. Enough. They didn't want to let the other ones see that they were laughing. So nobody laughed because they were so untrusting in a certain regard. Have you worked with organizations or businesses where you come in and you recognize that there is a state of untrust and perhaps disrespect? How do you cultivate this this collaborative sense in a group that has that kind of a polarization?
Well, and by the way, we find that environment often in all kinds of different organizations. We start with the assumption that that's not what people want, right? That they're trapped in a certain way of being in relationship with each other, but underneath that, there's a desire to be able to collaborate and work together, right? So the second thing that we do is that we really insist on having our work happen over a length of time. You know, oftentimes when you go into organizations, they want you to do it in a half day or an hour, and you can't really create the kind of fundamental transformation that we're talking about in a really short period of time. But I find when you put people in a context of inclusion, where you as the facilitators hold them as naturally creative, resourceful, and whole, and able to come up with their own solutions and give them a little bit of space and trust them, very slowly they start to do that. And the human being underneath them begins to emerge. I'm thinking of I had the opportunity to do a lot of our work inside a prison in Littleton, Colorado. Mm-hmm. And, boy, you talk about a terrified, non-trusting population.
Sure.
We just held them as, you know, we didn't hold them as convicts or criminals. We held them as human beings who made a mistake and believed in them. And slowly over time, they begin to respond to that, like sunflowers turning to the sun. Not all of them. Some of them were lost, you know, to drugs or to mental disorder, but many, many of them begin to emerge and feel safe enough to start to open their heart. And I fundamentally believe that with any collection or team of human being, that's what's always underneath, is the desire to be connected to each other and to be in collaboration with each other. And that there's a lot of barriers that get in the way, sometimes a lot of fear and a lot of habit.
You know, that's kind of leading to
what we do.
Go ahead. Yep.
I'm sorry. Another thing that we do, in addition to everything that Karen said was so wonderful, is we truly get people to become the choosers of their life, be at choice. In other words, so the first place they have to go to, you know, trust and respect and those kind of things is themselves. And they have to know, you know, how do you listen to yourself and listen to truly your deeper sense of values, your life purpose, and then make choices for yourself. And oftentimes, you know, we go into organizations, Stephen, we'll work with people on coaching or leadership, and one of the things they discover right away is they want to leave the organization. That happens, you know, and it's when we work with the management team and stuff like that, we have to say that that's a possibility. That may happen because we want people to be a choice and not just blindly doing the doing of their lives, you know, and because you can't do any of this leadership if you're not at choice.
Right, right. So that's the initial authority, essentially, is being the author of your own life. And if you're fortunate enough to be in an organization that is naturally cultivating that's quite a blessing.
I think our organizational life
as developers.
How's that?
Our job as developers is to develop corporations, organizations that do foster that.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. Karen, you were going to say something?
I think organizations are changing. So much of the organizational conversation right now is emergent. You know, there's a wonderful book by Frederick Laloux called Reinventing Organizations. It's beautifully written. I would recommend it highly to your leaders. And it's really all about how organizations can start to embrace this type of circular, you know, not one top dominant leadership conversation. So I think organizations are a place of tremendous change right now. And I try when I work in said organizations to remember to look at the situation with fresh eyes rather than from my assumptions of the past, you know, well, this is a place where people are trapped, blah, 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 whatever my story is about how it is inside organizations.
Uh-huh. You know, and watching the political debates, I'm seeing, you know, 10 or 15 people up there. It occurred to me that they are really, ultimately, they need to be teammates. And I could see that on the Democratic Party platform there. I think Marianne Williamson, by the way, really gets that that essentially this is all about the contributions that each of them bring, and that she wasn't competing, you know, she wasn't trying to beat anybody. She was simply trying to express her view. So they couldn't get her to criticize other candidates like they want you to do. But when I saw the candidates up there, it just seemed like how would you, in these days, and I'm glad to hear that the circular organizational model is circular leadership is developing, because this certainly seems to be where we are going or where we want to go. What do you see on the horizon? I'm glad that you mentioned the Reinventing Organizations book. What else do you see on the horizons in your own work and others that is going to help us create a more collaborative society rather than having all of this energy spent fighting one another?
You know, I think one of the things that's really tragic, and I found tragic in watching the Democratic debates as well, is that what has gone missing from our political conversation, at least in the United States, is our ability to discourse and disagree at the idea level. Instead, it has, in my opinion, devolved into personal, you know, relational attacks. And I think that ability to have really divergent ideas and to debate them and to disagree and to put forward our point of view and listen to other people's point of view is highly, highly creative and a real source of true, deep, resonant collaboration. So I think that ability to disagree effectively and efficiently and robustly while still holding the relationship and those values that Henry mentioned earlier, the trust and the respect for each other intact, is foundational to us resolving some of the big challenges that we face, because the only way we can resolve them is together. We are on a team. We're on Team Human. And whether we think so or not, or whether we agree with that, it's a reality. We share this, you know, planet we call Earth as a home. And we're going to need to learn how to work together, how to agree and disagree effectively, and be both collaborative and divergent if we're going to accomplish the objectives that we want, that we need. Again, both and. There I am again.
I love that. Other than that idea. Go ahead, Henry.
In fact, we believe that collaboration doesn't happen without conflict. In other words, a lot of times we think we have to get rid of conflict before we can collaborate. We actually think conflict is a creative part of collaboration, and that if you can work on collaborating on the ideas or the directions or those kind of things, And even though that in the collaboration there will be disagreement, there will be conflict, and out of that conflict will come the collaboration, the way forward, you know? But if we spend
so
much
time...
It's
what we call the third way. Not Henry's way, not my way, but an outcome that neither of us could have imagined from our own points of view. But until we represent our points of view and have a disagreement, we can't begin to see the third way possibility.
You know, that's so true. My friend Joseph McCormick, who is a conservative transpartisan activist, was running a group in Seattle. And, you know, half the people there were, you know, progressive Greens and the other half were, you know, conservative libertarians. And after all the shouting died down, they were really able to share information and learn from one another. And he called it, he said it's a dynamo. When you have these two polar opposites in relationship, like you're talking about, that relationship, even if it sounds like they're disagreeing, that disagreement is the dialectic that actually creates what emerges. So
I got goosebumps.
It's a very evolutionary idea. And I'm so happy to hear that that you've been doing this work, Henry and Karen Kimsey House. And you can find out more by going to the WikiPolitiki website and page. There's a link to their book. Thank you. Thank you so much for being on our show and sharing about coactive leadership. This is Steve Barron, the WikiPolitiki. Oh, it was a pleasure for me, too. And we'll be joining you again next week. Thank you.